If you can stay tuned, we're going to start an oral history of the Gilbert Theater. Historian is Jason Wetzel. Jason, welcome.
Thank you, Lynn.
I'm very, very excited about this, to get all of these little tidbits under our on tape or something, right? So what's your first question?
Well, my first question is a little something for the radio audience about Lynn Pryor. Give us a little background on who you are and how you started.
I was born on a stormy and winter night. No, I was born in Northern California on July 14th, 1934. Wonderful little town in the just a few miles from the Pacific coast in a fabulous county called Humboldt County. has several distinctions. One of them is it has a Redwood National Park. So I grew up just in the shadow of these giant sequoia redwoods. In a beautiful valley called the Eel River Valley. The river, Eel River, was one of the few rivers in the world that flows due north and empties into the Pacific Ocean. A marvelous childhood, wonderful parents. My father was a pharmacist, my mother a registered nurse. we lived on a lovely little street. I'm glossing over the difficult times with in childhood, but by and large, it was childhood.
Before childhood was in what years?
1934 to, I remember World War II. I had a Victory Garden. So I'm sure years from now I'll be one of those people that can say, I remember what it was like in World War II on the home front. My father would go out in the middle of the night and walk around a tower looking for Japanese planes. A date which will live in infamy. So I could go on and on about my childhood.
Let me ask you this. How did a child tending a Victory Garden in Northern California get interested in the theater?
Well, I've always been interested in stories. And I started, my first theater was in our garage. I put up a burlap curtain and benches in front. Now, the Gilbert Theater, when it was here at the house, starting in 94, it was always free. But at my house, when I was growing up, my garage theater, I charged 10 cents. So I was making more money in those days than I was in later years. Anyway, I would make up these stories, and the neighborhood children would come and sit there. And I remember, to my shame, I offered them a drink. It was water with watercolor, and a watercolor brush, and get some orange on the brush, and then make an orange drink, which was just watercolor that painters use. These kids, this doesn't taste very good. Drink it. Where's your 5 cents?
Now, were you the producer?
I did everything, just like I did here in the beginning. The new director, the director who's directing Gilbert's current play, Book Club, arrived. He's staying here, sleeping on the old theater downstairs. I was telling him that when I was planning the Gilbert Theater in California, just before I moved here, I was saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. One of my friends said, I can see it now. You're performing on stage, then play's over, you run out and clap, and then throw a bouquet up on the stage, then run back on the stage and catch it. Well, it almost was like that at times. But you want to go back to childhood?
We'll go back to the childhood, but I want to ask, going from the burlap theater...
In elementary school, we were very, very lucky. We had a theater in my elementary school. in every class. It was first grade through eighth, and we were every 2 weeks. Each one of the grades, a grade had to do a program. So one was the first grade, and then 2 weeks later, then the second grade, like that. And so I was always involved in those. And we did Christmas Carol, and I was Fezziwig. My first line on stage was, "Ho, ho, ho, let's have a dance before a man can say Jack Robinson."
Radio audience, that will be a trivia question in years hence.
Anyway, so I was very active in theater all my elementary years. And in high school, I was very, very lucky. My drama teacher, Elizabeth Abraham, bless her heart, eccentric, but she had a tremendous background in theater, and her master's in theater from Northwestern. There she was in my little town, giving drama classes 1 and 2.
And the year was roughly?
48 to 52. Drama classes that were just probably as good as you could get anywhere. So I had a really, really good start. In theater with and her standards and her choice of plays and her attention to detail. It was a great, great beginning.
So this was your formative years in theater.
Yes.
And you learned a lot from this.
Yes, right. And then I was in play after play after play in school, in high school. And my senior year, our town, I played George. And I remember it was a drama teacher from a nearby town came rushing up to me after George, curtain came down. He grabbed me, just grabbed my arm, began shaking. He said, "You're going to be a great actor. You're going to be a great actor. I'll never forget it." So that was, anyway, so then I started college and Humboldt State University, just right there in my home county, and was a drama major. And, I'm not going to go into my college time. It's we don't have enough time for that. I mean,
give us some highlights.
After my freshman year at Humboldt State, I transferred to San Francisco State University because I wanted to be there with Herbert Blau and Jules Irving.
And this year would have been
53. And Jules Irving later, and Herbert Blau's memory serves, they left their to professors at San Francisco State, and went to Lincoln, started Lincoln Center. Now, somebody out there listening is going to correct me, I'm sure. But they left that university and started, became very involved in theater in New York.
And the Lincoln Center, for those who don't know.
Right.
Very prestigious.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, they were marvelous. I was there for 2 years with them. And I had taken classes from them. And Amy Irving is, the actress, is his daughter. Some might know her. Anyway, then my senior year, I wanted to go abroad, but I didn't really go abroad. I went to Mexico City and went to had a semester in Mexico City to make a very vain attempt to learn Spanish and kind of broaden my horizons. And but then I, by some miracle, the University of Humboldt State University let me come back and finish in 4 years, the second half of my senior year. But we had graduation. I must tell you this. When I was at San Francisco State, they had a poetry center, really a world-class poetry center. They had poets come in from W.H. Auden was one. And I remember the sitting there in the auditorium, and W.H. Auden came out and with a sheath of papers all mixed up over, clasping to his chest, and then kind of lunging for the lectern, and then just throwing them on top of the lectern, and pages were all over the floor. And then he began this absolute brilliant talk about poetry and And I know how, if you wanted to read something, if you didn't have it memorized, the papers were all over, mixed up on the floor. And then he was very dramatic and put his hand on his head. Anyway, I then sat there, not really absorbing the poetry, but I just thought, this is going to make a great, great bit for me to do in the future of a poet reading his poems.
And did you ever do
that? Oh, I did. I did. I did it a number of times. And great success.
Now, from college, in those days,
there was the draft. And this is very personal, but I think it's certainly part of my story, is that I knew I was a conscious subject.
Thousands of demonstrators opposed to the Vietnam War assembled in the nation's capital for a mass protest. For the most part orderly, minor scuffles did occur between the demonstrators and hecklers.
More I knew about myself and about the world out there. And this, of course, we were not at war, but there was still a draft, and we were still reeling from the World War II and Korea. And I knew that I could never bear arms or shoot at anybody. And so my brother, who was the fountain of all wisdom in my childhood and young adulthood, said, why don't you join the Navy? Well, this is all very embarrassing. When I admit this, okay, why not? This at my age, what does it matter? But so I was accepted at for OCS in Newport, Rhode Island, Officers Candidate School. And to make a very painful story very short, is that I washed out of there and was then obliged to go to boot camp in Bainbridge, Maryland, as a seaman. So I, not only was I not an officer, I was at the lowest of the low. But when I was being interviewed in San Francisco before being accepted in OCS, this is vintage Lynn Pryor. I said to the recruiter, he said, "Well, how do you see yourself working out in the Navy as an officer?" I said, "Well, I know I could never steer a ship." And he said, "That's exactly what you'll be doing as a second lieutenant." That was an oh moment for me. I know we can swear in this world of podcasts, but I'm not going to, at least until next week. So I still went because let me backtrack for just a minute. When I wanted to become, when I knew I was a CO, conscientious objector, I knew that to get that accepted by the government before I was approaching my 18th birthday, when I was going to register for the draft. And I knew that I would have to register as a CO, but in order to get that designation, you had to have a letter from your minister. Now, I was going to, I've been going ever since kindergarten, going to the Methodist church in my hometown. My parents did not go. I decided to go myself and just went there every Sunday. I was six, I was seven, I was eight, I've been until 12, 14, 16, 18, president of the Methodist Youth Fellowship. President of Methodist Youth Fellowship, and loved it. It was marvelous times. I loved directing all those activities and meetings, and meeting with the minister once a week. He was an Old Testament kind of man at the pulpit. He was just this booming voice, and he would just fill that charming little church, open beam ceilings. So I knew I had to have his support. So I made an appointment to visit him in his office. And His name is Carl Allen, the Reverend Carl Allen. He loved to tell you that he was a lifelong friend of Carl Sandburg. And he would have us over his house and read things that Carl Sandburg had written. And I loved his sermons, but here this day, I'm 17, going on 18, and I have to get his support. So I sit down and I said, Lynn, what is it? I said, well, and I told him that I said, I don't really know that I could not take part in the army situation, that I'm, and that you've seen me grow up and can know what I was, what I am, what my heart is like. And that he just kind of turned like this, put his arm on the table and said, well, I know I couldn't do it. It was another oh moment for me. This is the man of the cloth saying that he could go in the army and shoot people, but in other words, shame on you for not supporting. Because you see, when during the war, the minister who was at my church at that time was the CO.
Let me ask you, how did that influence your life?
I just went home. I don't know if I was crying or not, but I knew that any possibility I could get of getting that designation was not going to happen. That's when my brother suggested the Navy, and that's what happened to the Navy. So I washed out of OCS and went into Cambridge. Then it was not a distinguished career. I didn't make no progress at all. I don't think I made even one more hashtag or whatever you call it.
But your experience in the Navy helped shape you.
Well, I was on land in something called machine accounting. It's the early days before all the computers today, in the late 50s, which their punch cards and all that. If you didn't do it right, they all got ruined in the machine, coming out, spilling, throwing out these things. You put the information down. I was a washout. I talk of my life being such a success. Well, there are times when I just barely made it through, and my military experience was one of them. But I arrived back home. And then I got out a few months early to go back to graduate school. So then I went back to Humboldt State as a fifth year to become a teacher.
When teaching what, drama?
Yes. And so then... Then I was working through that year. Then I fell in love.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, will we continue next week with the story of Lynn Pryor? And the reason we're going into a little detail with Lynn's life is in order to understand the Gilbert Theater. I think it's important for us to understand the creative genius behind the Gilbert, which is Lynn, and we need to understand him as a person and what influenced his life and what was significant and how that influenced his creativity, which eventually involved Gilbert. So stay tuned next week for the history of the Gilbert Theater.